And now it's time for Inside Voices with Kevin Causey-Thomas, a local discussion focused on systemic racism, injustice, and hate in our country. Although we may not always agree, the aim of Inside Voices is to confront these truths together by sharing the voices of those facing these struggles and to find a path to making things better. We invite you to listen to this ongoing conversation. And now, here's Kevin.
Black men and women, allies in the struggle, people of all races, colors, religions, and nationalities. Welcome to another episode of Inside Voices. I'm your host, Kevin Causey-Thomas, and you're listening right here on 97.9 The Hill and ChapelBurrow.com. This is an ongoing conversation that we've been having around race, social justice, systemic racism, you know, just everything that's going on out here in our world. And we welcome everybody to come in on this conversation and help contribute. And we have a very special guest on our show today. He is an assistant editor at The Washington Post, and many of you will recognize him as a CNN contributor. And also was in The Hill for about 20 years and is a UNC Law School alumni. So if y'all would show some love in Radio Land to Mr. David Swerdlick. David, thanks for coming on the show.
Causey, man, thanks for having me. It's great to talk to you. It's been a minute.
Yes, it has. Yeah, man. And thanks for coming on. This is the platform that we have here locally dedicated to these types of conversations, you know, to,
definitely,
you know, we want to be ahead of the curve before things trend. And so, you know, with I'll jump right in, man, you know, politics and where we are right now in our world in November with this post-election. We have results of an election that are now being questioned on the highest from the highest, you know, seat in the land. And,
right,
you know, we're seeing lawsuits and affidavits. We're seeing hair dye run down Rudy Giuliani's temple. We are seeing so many things go on. And I just have to ask you your opinion and your perspective. Is Donald Trump legitimately trying to steal this election, like, currently?
So, Causey, I do think you could say that President Trump is trying to steal the election. There's some complicated caveats to that. One is that ultimately, I think when we get to noon on January 20th, which is inauguration day and what time of day the handoff is, I think Trump will go and I think Biden will go ahead and move on into the White House. But whereas a week or two ago, you know, people were saying, oh, President Trump is just sort of engaging in his expected sore loser posture, and some other Republicans are afraid to sort of tap him on the shoulder and say, yeah, you lost, too bad, so sad. Now that this has been going on for a couple of weeks after the election was called, I do think it's fair to say that this is an attempt to overturn the results of the presidential election. Even if it's not successful, President Trump, his campaign, and his allies, most of the Republicans in Congress, have taken this too far.
Absolutely.
At this point to say that it's just, you know, oh, they're just humoring him or stroking his ego. I will note that I have lost count, but 30 legal challenges or more than 30 have been thrown out of court at this point. There's been a recount in Georgia or an audit. There may still be a recount. I think the president at one point called for a partial recount in Wisconsin. There was that controversy a couple of days ago where two of the four members, the two Republican members of the Wayne County, Michigan Elections Board, and Wayne County is where Detroit is, a city that's over three quarters black,
right,
had voted not to certify those counties' results. One of those Republicans changed their vote and now has said they want to change back, but the vote in that county has been certified. So we're past the point of a hypothetical sore loser. President Trump is taking steps, even if he knows in his heart of hearts that they will most likely fail, to try and somehow pull it inside straight and
right,
flip the results of the election. And that, I think, has destructive properties for democracy. Democracy doesn't work, Causey.
Mm-hmm.
If the loser doesn't acknowledge that they lost.
Absolutely.
It's that simple.
Absolutely. And you know, and to say that it's absolutely the popular vote to lose by as many votes as he did, even in the popular. And, you know, and a lot of people will argue about Electoral College and if it's still, you know, relevant in this moment in time. But like to lose by as many votes as he did and then to say, well, no, I'm going to override what the will of the people, the word of the people, by using the tricks that he uses in his business plots in New York, you know, I'm going to sue you, I'm going to declare this or try to block you. And it just seems super juvenile. And so I would ask this next question to you, David, with, you know, the optics being what they are on this, that he's obviously lost, obviously just trying to cling to whatever last threads of whatever. Why are Republicans continuing to, man, to like just go along with this, like, and almost back it? Some Republicans are still seeming like back him on this, and they're tweeting from the GOP account that this election is a fraud. Like, what's their angle on this? Why do they continue to hold his hand in the situation when they could pull out? Like, now it seems like would be the time.
So there are a few exceptions. Yeah. Senator Mitt Romney from Utah stands out. But most national Republicans are scared of President Trump. It's that simple. And when I say they're scared of him, they're scared of the voters that he controls. Mm-hmm. On the Republican side, President Trump has still 85, 90 plus percent support among Republican voters. Even though President Trump lost the election, he got the second highest vote total in a presidential election ever. Absolutely. Behind Joe Biden, who had more this time.
Right.
And Republicans in Congress, other Republicans throughout the country, they know this, and they may want to get reelected in their Senate or House seats or governor seats. They may want to run for president one day. And as long as they can't afford, at least in their minds, to do the right thing because they have to stay on the good foot with the bigger share of
right.
Republican voters,
right.
they're not going to check the president. I mean, it suggests to me that they're putting their party and their own ambitions ahead of democracy and fairness and ahead of their country. But I think that's the reason. Can I make one more quick point?
Absolutely.
Before we leave the topic of what President Trump is doing now, I just wanted to point out that you're right. What mm-hmm. he's doing is juvenile, but it's actually also worse than juvenile. And I will say this in two ways. One is that, you know, if you look at the exit polls, there's been a lot of talk since the election about Trump improving his numbers with, let's say, black voters. Right?
Sure.
He got 12% of the black vote, 19% of black men. That's a lot for a Republican.
Yeah.
Okay. He got over 30% with Latinos, over 30 or close to 30% over 30% with Latinos and over 30% with Asian Americans. But the flip side of that is that if you add up all of the people of color that did vote for Joe Biden,
mm-hmm.
Joe Biden got 71%, over 70%. This is, you know, preliminary exit polls
sure.
of the non-white vote. So to me, if one side got more than 70% of the people of color vote and the other side is saying, even though you won, you didn't win, that's a slap in the face.
Absolutely.
In my view, to the 70% plus of non-white voters who chose Biden. The other thing about this is that there's a pandemic, obviously, and any delay in a smooth transition from one administration to another affects the effectiveness of the next administration in fighting that pandemic. This isn't a transition where there's like, oh, well, once we get this done with this, maybe we'll not nominate someone to the Supreme Court, or maybe we'll look at, you know, tinkering with Obamacare. There's an ongoing global health crisis right. that has to be dealt with. And this is causing a problem with the effective response to it from one administration to another.
Absolutely. And then once again, how that affects black men and women and people of color, because who is COVID attacking? And you know,
right.
Latino, Latinx community, it's the people that are continuing to be marginalized, now being marginalized even in response to a pandemic. But, you know, along these lines, and you know, we want to continue this conversation, and we're getting into the topics of, is Donald Trump trying to steal this election, and what does a post-Trump presidency look like? We're going to be right back. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. This is Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Be right back.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And welcome back to Inside Voices. Your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas. You're listening on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. We're continuing our conversation right here. We have David Swerdlick, an assistant editor at The Washington Post and a CNN political contributor, also a Carolina alum, on the show with us today. And we're continuing our conversation about Donald Trump. We spoke about him, you know, his attempts to, you know, steal the election, make our democracy less legitimate. I'll just go there with it. Right. And now we want to talk about the residual in this time, you know, in this space. We're talking about, you know, like we said, the second most voted for president ever. We are talking about, you know, a poll that I saw that said that 70% of Republicans feel that this election may have been tampered with or is fraudulent in some way. You continue to have members of the GOP on a high level, you know, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, support Donald Trump. So even removing him and put, you know, and President-elect Biden takes office, what is the residual of this post? You know, what are we left with in this next 4 years of Donald Trump? What can we speculate, or what do you think it'll be like, David?
Yeah, Kazi. So let me come back to the president-elect Biden side, and let's talk about outgoing President Trump for
okay.
just 1 second.
Sure.
Here's what I see coming down the horizon. President Trump, like we were talking about before the break, and I should say, you know, I neglected to say, he's so mercurial. He's so unpredictable. He improvises so much that by the time you and I get finished talking, the whole thing could change, right? He can change up at any moment.
Right.
But let's assume we're on this path that we've been on for the last few days, for the next few days. Here's what's going on with the Republicans that want to be president next. Right now, they've got to hold on to those Trump voters and not go crossways with Trump. You know, they don't want to get a tweet to his 80 or 90 million Twitter followers that says, oh, this person sold me out or whatever, because that will hurt their reputation with Republican voters.
Right.
But your listeners should remember these names. And this is not a complete list. This is my own view of things. Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, Ambassador Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina, maybe Senator Ted Cruz from Texas. Maybe Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, maybe Vice President Pence, although I feel like his face are super tied to Trump at this point. He's also a little older than a lot of those people that I named.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are all going to have to figure out the right combination of staying on the same foot as the Trump-supporting Republican base, and at the same time distinguishing themselves and being able to say, I like this thing that President Trump did, but I would do it differently in this way.
Yeah.
And you're going to have candidates like, I'm just going to use Senator Hawley. People should get used to that name. Josh mm-hmm. Hawley, who was on 60 Minutes a couple of weeks ago, who has a lot of the policy views of President Trump. He's not a traditional free market conservative. He's more of a protectionist, nationalist Republican politician. But unlike Trump, he's young. He is more telegenic. He doesn't say the vulgar, racist, sexist things, at least not overtly. And
it's not the brand.
And he, you know, all of the things. He's young. He has a nice head of hair.
Right.
People say, oh, now we're talking about optics, but that stuff matters.
He's got a strong chin. Yep.
Right. And mm-hmm. so that's these people are going to have to figure out, okay, I want to agree with Trump where I can, but I want to show that I'm my own man. I'm not going to be tweeting insults. I'm not going to go for the policies that failed, et cetera, et cetera. And that's their challenge. My own view, Kazi, just one more quick thing,
absolutely.
Is that especially for someone like Senator Cruz, people know Ted Cruz, who ran for president before, it seems to me there's an opportunity right now to break from Trump, especially because Trump has done him dirty in the past.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Cruz and you want to run for president, and Cruz is about 50, 51 years old, and he's in his second or third term as senator, I think there's an opportunity for him to say, look, I agreed with his tax cut. I agreed with him on a lot of policies. He built the party. He expanded the tent with some black voters, some Latino voters. But, you know, he did call my wife ugly, and he did say my dad had something to do with the assassination of Kennedy back in 2016. So it seems like an open lane for him to say, you know, we've humored you for 4 weeks. Now it's time to shut the book on President Trump and move on. You lost the election, yeah. Mr. President.
Yeah.
But again, you see in these folks like Senator Cruz a lack of, you know, intestinal fortitude when it comes to standing up with him. And
scared.
Maybe that will serve them well 4 years from now, but I suspect it might not.
Yeah. Actually just scared that that percentage of his fan base is going to turn on whoever he points his sights on or tweets on. And and I guess that is a sign of a party that's been hijacked. You know, I don't know that, you know, I think Republic, you know, and this help me with this, David. I feel like there's two things that people are going to have to reconcile post-election. Republicans are you going to continue to stay or, you know, back with the fact that half of us feel that if a vote for Donald Trump was a vote for racism, homophobia, sexism, xenophobia, we feel like that that was part of what has been now branded with into the party, right? And do you continue to carry that energy? And then the other side is like, Democrats, we are obviously missing something. And I do not know, you know, what it is and if we can speak to that. And I just think in our messaging and our outreach, there's something that has alienated half of the country about Democrats. And I'm trying to figure out what that is. Maybe you could help me with that.
Yeah, a couple things. So first of all, I think it's worth noting that as we move into the Biden-Harris administration, you know, if your listeners, me, you, we all have to get our minds way back to the Democratic primary when Democrats were, there was a real dispute between the moderates, the Bidens, the Harrises, the moderates, maybe Buttigieg, a little more of a moderate, and then the progressives, Sanders, Warren, Julian Castro emerged as more of a progressive than people thought at one point. That fight was fought. The ticket was a moderate ticket, in part because it was perceived that moderates would be better at beating Trump, which seems to have been the case. And, but there, we forecast as political observers like me and you, this idea that if there's a Biden-Harris administration, progressives are going to be pushing a moderate centrist Biden to do at least incrementally more progressive things. I think that'll happen. But what people have to remember is that COVID has changed the whole game. The first 100 days for sure, and the first year probably, of the Biden-Harris administration is going to be COVID.
Right.
We've got a global health crisis that has to be addressed and quickly, and that is not going to leave the room that people may have once thought for, let's talk about the Green New Deal, let's talk about, you know, the public option, let's talk about some other progressive wish list initiatives. There's no time for that.
Absolutely.
There's just no time for that, and people are going to have to get their minds around that, at least in the first year of this administration, that's how it's going to go because it's too big of an issue. It affects health, life, and the economy. In terms of, you were asking me about, you know, how Republicans have sort of turned around. This is not a traditional Reagan, Goldwater, even Bush 1 or Bush 2 conservative laissez-faire free market Republican Party anymore.
Right.
When you have President Trump doing tariffs that lead to a failed trade war, and his remedy for it is essentially $30 billion of farmer welfare to cover what they lost in the trade war, that's not traditional free market conservatism anymore. That's something different. That's more of a protectionist nationalist thing. I know I'm running out of time.
Well,
quick point here is that you have a situation where there's not a lot of low-hanging fruit for either side anymore. I think President Obama was an exceptional politician, certainly a top 15 president, arguably a top 10 president.
Agree.
But he plucked the last low-hanging fruit, right? Get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Triple the number of women on the Supreme Court. Pull troops out of Iraq. May or may not have been a good move at the time he did it. You know, finally actually do health care. You know, I'm not the hugest fan of the way the Affordable Care Act turned out, but he did it.
Yeah.
Okay. There are no easy wins left for either side anymore. Mm-hmm. And that is what the two parties are going to have to contend with as we move forward.
Absolutely, David. Absolutely. And the piece for me, just being a, you know, citizen cause out here, is I need Republicans to reconcile the fact that what has come along with Trumpism that will remain in the residual, you know, is Now, racism is out there. It's not hidden anymore. It's been, you know, not like it was hidden before, but to the point where it was like put into politics where you're saying that I may show up to a Trump rally and someone may show up with a rebel flag or a Nazi flag or something of that sort. And are you representing the same party as those people that show up? And that part of it for me is something that morally, I think that, yeah, America needs to look at ASAP, you know, because that's, I've been passed by 4 or 5 different Trump caravans, you know,
right.
I never thought I would see a Trump caravan on Franklin Street. Never.
And, yeah, me either.
You know, and, you know, so we got work to do. We got work to do. And we're going to take a break right now, having a great conversation with David Swerdlick, assistant editor at Washington Post and CNN contributor. Y'all stay with us right here on Inside Voices. I'm listening on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this. And now, back to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas. Once again, here's Kevin.
And welcome back to Inside Voices. Your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas. You're listening on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. We've had a great conversation with David Swerdlick, an assistant editor to Washington Post and CNN contributor, about Donald Trump trying to steal the election, what his presidency, you know, what our world is like post-presidency. And what is there any other thoughts that you have closing out, Dave? We had a great conversation, but I think there were some other thoughts you wanted to share with the listeners out there.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about that when you said that there was a Trump caravan that you saw going down Franklin Street, and I agree with you. I could have never imagined that as a longtime Chapel Hill resident. I will just say this about Trump's base of support, which is a big base of support. I don't think, and different people have different views on this, I don't think that all or even most Trump supporters are racist. Some do. Some say you have to be to have voted for someone who's a racist. I don't think that. I think people have lots of complicated reasons for having voted for the president. And 70 plus million people is too many for everybody to have had that like malice and antipathy in their heart. I will say this, though. I do think that the vast majority of Trump supporters like Trump. I don't think it's the case that people are holding their nose and voting for him and saying, well, I didn't like him, or I didn't love it all, but I wanted a tax cut, or I didn't love it, but I wanted to see my stock portfolio grow.
Right.
That can't be the case because, number one, you could have gotten a tax cut with President Jeb Bush.
Right.
And it can't be the case about your 401k or your stock portfolio because the stock market did better under President Obama than it did under President Trump. Now, granted, President Obama had 8 years, Trump had 4 years, but from Obama's day one till he left office 8 years later, the stock market went up 149%. So it can't be, oh, I needed my portfolio to grow.
Right.
And so when people tell these exit pollsters and other people, oh, it's the economy, it's the economy, that's the kind of answer you give a pollster. But I really think that the majority of people just like President Trump.
Yeah.
Either they watched The Apprentice for a decade and they liked him, or right. They like that he's rude, crude, and puts a finger in people's eye,
yeah.
Or he's entertaining, or they in some people's cases, they like the fact that he puts some acid and some malice into the things he says.
Yeah.
And right now, that's a factor in our politics, and I don't think that's going to go away just the minute he leaves office.
Absolutely not. It's, you know, when we spoke earlier in one of the earlier segments about how many, you know, black males voted for him, and I see Lil Wayne campaigning for him, and Lil Pump, and
Lil Pump.
Yeah, he called him Lil Pimp, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he did call him Lil Pimp.
Yeah, and I just see. It's you know, and Kanye and different, and that would be a whole episode in itself, you know, talking about
Kanye
that.
Is a jackass.
Yeah, that's straight like that.
He's in his own category. President Obama said 11 years ago, he's a jackass. That's nothing further needs to be said.
Mic drop right there on that. Absolutely. And it just, you know, I think that, like you said, and there's a lot left in the residual. And, you know, on this show, we try to always end on a note of hope and optimism and saying that on Inauguration Day, we know for a fact, whether it be kicking and screaming, that this man will be leaving the White House and that we will have President-elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And so, that's the beginning of the hope. And I think that we always put out on the show that we can't put any one, president or vice president as our savior. It's still going to be, what people do on a local and local political level in their government and politics and their governors, mayors, right on down to their city council, and affecting change, where you live in the immediate tense is, what we also promote here. And so, voting in the primaries and midterms. And if you feel like there's an issue in your community or in this community that you want to see changed, that you don't have to wait on Trump or Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, that you can do something on a local level. And so we promote that here as well. And so thank you for coming on, David. Is there any, social media where people can follow you and all that you do?
Sure. And I just want to say, since we want to leave it on a positive note, Kazi, mm-hmm. yeah. right, the fact that around 150 million people voted this year yeah. is a positive.
Absolutely.
That's, people need to exercise their right to vote. I appreciate you having me on. People can follow me on Twitter at Swerdlick, my last name, Swerdlick.
Okay, perfect. And y'all know that we're on here every Sunday at 2:30 on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts. We post that, a couple days after the live show. And if you want to reach out to us, you can hit us at insidevoices@wchl.com. Once again, we want to thank David Swerdlick for being on the show. Tune back in next Sunday at 2:30 right here on 97.9 The Hill. It's your host, Kevin Kazi Thomas. Y'all have a great weekend.
You're listening to Inside Voices with Kevin Kazi Thomas on 97.9 The Hill. We'll be back with more after this.